Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Well, let's just say the Bucks won't win the offseason this year. They learned they will lose Quan Alexander to the Niners. Adam Humphries is going to the Titans. And DeSean Jackson gets his wish and will be traded to the Philadelphia Eagles. We'll tell you why maybe everything that happened Monday wasn't a bad thing. And the Tampa Bay Lightning blast the Toronto Maple Leafs 6-2. Their 53 wins are just one shy of the club record that they set last season and still have 12 games to play. Tyler Johnson, Cedric Paquette with a pair of goals in that one. And as Diana Nero said in her story in the Tampa Bay Times, the Lightning were both lucky and good. Sometimes it helps to be both. The Rays beat the Phillies in Clearwater, and Blake Snell, well, he was dealing. We've got all of that and a look at the NFL free agency on this edition of Sports Day Tampa Bay. I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times, along with producer Steve Versnick. Hey, do you want to be a millionaire? Well, for 30 years, Howard and Sue Million have brought the cool comfort of air conditioning to the entire Tampa Bay area, making thousands of residents millionaires with their quality products and service. Now, Millionaire is currently offering 0% interest for 72 months on qualifying equipment. Give them a call at 727-862-2100 to take advantage of this great offer on brand new quality Trane air conditioning units or to schedule service or maintenance. Call 727-862-2100 today. Trust the masters of comfort, Millionaire. All right, Steve, so let me start off by officially wishing my wife a happy birthday. This falls every March 11th, and unfortunately for her, so does free agency. So it's awful for her, but I mean, let's put it this way. This is the 15th, as we do this podcast, it's the 15th anniversary of John Lynch getting released. That's how this relationship began, more or less, after we were married. So it did not change, I can tell you that, on Monday, with the start of the what they call the legal tampering period. At noon on Monday, teams were able to negotiate and reach agreements on contracts that will then cannot be signed or executed until 4 p.m. on Wednesday.
You know, it took Bryce Harper months to get a contract. It's amazing how many NFL contracts get negotiated in about 2 minutes.
It's incredible. It really is. How's it happen? What's funny is they have what the legal tampering period is, but they don't mention all the illegal tampering that must occur before noon, because as soon as noon hit, there were like 95 deals already done, which you know, it used to be the free agent frenzy was Wednesday at 4. Now it has moved up till noon on, 2 days earlier on the 11th. Where Adam Schefter just, starts spitting them out one out. According to my sources, get another sighting here, another sighting. We get one more. Wait a minute. Let me check my BlackBerry. Oh, wait. No, it's not a BlackBerry anymore.
By the way, did you see him? I was watching the ESPN draft frenzy or whatever they were, free agency frenzy, whatever they were calling it. And they've got the whole people out. They have Mort there. They've got Josina Anderson. They've got a bunch of people. And they got the camera just kind of circling around them. They're all around this square table or whatever else. Mm-hmm. And Adam Schefter, every 3 seconds, is looking down at the iPhone.
Yes.
I mean, it was nonstop of just kept staring down. No matter who was talking, no matter what was going on, that's all he was doing the whole time.
And he's typing. He's literally typing in on Twitter what the deal he just got from the whoever the last agent that texted him. And he's breaking news on the air and on Twitter at the same time. It's you can watch the real time unveiling of this, and it's pretty fascinating. But it started early. Look, I think last night after we got done taping this podcast, there was a report, and of course I had written this when Bruce Arians sort of first got here and talked about re-recruiting DeSean Jackson, which is ridiculous because he's under contract. That their intent all along was to trade DeSean Jackson. We'll get to him in a minute. But it started last night, with sort of a drip, 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 here's what's coming. And then I started at 8 o'clock in the morning, 7, 8 o'clock in the morning, with news that they were going to lose both Jackson and Humphries. I mean, they were pretty sure, or not just Jackson and Humphries, but they're going to lose Humphries and Quan. Those were the two. And they were pretty sure about Quan. And Quan was either going to go to the Jets or the 49ers. And he was going to get paid. And it looked like Humphries might go to the Jets. The Patriots were also in on it, no surprise. And then he ends up signing with the Titans. But the Bucks kind of figured out early on that their offers just weren't going to match the kind of funny money that was out there. And it always is. You know, that's the thing. Like, you think you know what guys' market value is, and you hear these crazy numbers that their agents are asking for. But the fact of the matter is that the really great, great players don't make it to free agency. Because if they're really great, they've been signed to long-term extensions that they're very happy with after their fourth seasons. And some guys, you know, will play out their options and become free agents. But, you know, for the most part, it's sort of like winning the lottery. Like, you're the best player who made it here. And so if you've played it all, if you've got any kind of resume, if you've been a starter in this league, you're going to get crazy paid money because it's the pool that you're in. It's a, you know, you're a little bit of a big fish in a smaller free agent pond. And so true to what's the case every year, you start seeing these numbers and teams, you know, they have a ton of salary cap. The Bucks have been in this position many, many years. That's why they've always sort of seemed to have won the offseason going back to Lovie Smith days and probably before that. They're going to spend the money, and they're going to overpay for somebody else's mistakes or somebody else's problems or somebody else's free agents that they can no longer afford because they have cap issues like the Bucks do. So it was interesting sort of how the day unfolded. And really it began with Quan Alexander, it's a tough negotiation for the Bucks in that they absolutely like the player. But, you know, when he went down against the Cleveland Browns last November, I guess it was, October, November, you thought your heart sunk for him. You're like, oh my God, what a terrible injury to occur in your free agent season. Like, that's going to cost him millions and millions of dollars. Well, actually it didn't. God bless him. He did not suffer at all, with that injury. He got a max deal. And, you know, and I know what the Bucks are thinking. I mean, the Bucks are thinking, look, he's 4 months from even being able to perform on a field to have football activity. And you know, generally with those things, I mean, they've become fairly routine ACL injuries, and it's not quite like Tommy John surgery. You know, the recovery is not as long, but it's common. But you know, even then, you don't really know what that first year is going to be like. There are certain hurdles that guys have to get over, both physical and especially mental. And so, you know, they had a number. I don't know what that number was, but man, the San Francisco 49ers, they blew it away. They offered Quan Alexander and his ACL 4 years, $54 million, and more than that, they guaranteed him $27 million of that 54. That's an incredible number, man.
Well, the potential is there, and, you know, assuming he can get back to where he was, he could live up to that contract and make it worthwhile for the 49ers.
He could.
But it is a risk, particularly the first year of the contract.
Right. I mean, you just got to take it that, you know, okay, whatever we get, and then going forward, we're happy with him. And I know that, you know, and of course, John Lynch is not a stranger to this organization. I don't know if he was playing then, but of course, it seems like San Francisco plays the Bucks every year. In fact, they come here to Tampa next season, as a matter of fact, because the Bucks play the NFC West. But, you know, with Quan, I know exactly what happened. Kyle Shanahan was the offensive coordinator in Atlanta for a number of years. And the greatest game that I maybe have ever seen a player play next to Rondé Barber's NFC Championship game when they beat the Eagles might have been the game that Quan played in Atlanta after his brother was shot to death. If you remember, not far from Atlanta, Quan's brother had been shot, his teenage brother, and there was questions about, you know, the Bucks were like, look, you don't have to play. You know, he's like, no, my brother would want me to play, my family's coming and all this. I still get goosebumps thinking about it, and you can see it on NFL Network. They did a feature on it once. But basically, he was a man that was just on fire that day, and he had 20 tackles. I think he intercepted 3 passes. One of them was called back that he intercepted. Then he ran down Julio Jones. Like, Julio Jones had a pass in the flat and had run 20 yards down the field. And Quan Alexander came out of nowhere, ran him down, ripped the ball out of his hands, and started going the other way. I mean, it was a close game. It was the damnedest thing you've ever seen. And he's emotional, and he's sobbing on the sidelines. And after the game, Logan Mankins, of course, who was here a very short time, but was a big leader for them, presented the game ball to him in the locker room. And it was just, I mean, it was like a movie script. It was like something you'd never seen. The man was absolutely just in his own and possessed and playing for his brother and the memory of his brother to honor him. And I'm telling you, if that didn't leave an impression on Kyle Shanahan, nothing would have, right? And, of course, you know, they played him twice a year, and Kwon always seemed to have good games against Atlanta. He had good games against a lot of teams. And so I'm sure that that had an impact on why, you know, the 49ers who are in dire need of linebackers and looking for a little bit of attitude on their defense, you know, looking for a tone setter, and that's what Kwon has always been. You can argue whether he's a perennial Pro Bowler. He's made the Pro Bowl one time. You can argue whether he's in the top. I mean, now he is. Now he's like the highest paid inside linebacker. But you can argue whether he, you know, really ranks in the top 10, top 5 of Mike linebackers. But the one thing he is he's intense. He brings passion. He plays fast. Again, I don't know that he's missed games. He's been injured. He's had PED suspension as a rookie. You know, some things have happened. But he's still only 24 years old. So he's still got a lot of upside. And again, I don't know what the Niners will get out of him this year, but it was just too much for the Bucs, at least for their taste, and Jason Light's, you know, in their limited salary cap situation. Because when they started the day, they had the worst salary cap situation in the league with just over $2 million. So they were going to have to cut a player or trade one, which we'll get to in a minute, in order to create some cap room to get Kwon or get anybody signed. So, you know, working with the limited cap room, with a number of needs that they have, having re-signed Donovan Smith, Adam Humphries was still out there. So they decided, you know, 49ers got their man. And it was emotional. A lot of his teammates were tweeting, were congratulating him. You know, there was a report earlier that he had texted some of his teammates and told them he was moving on, and that got out. So, you know, I'm happy for Kwon. He's always been a professional to us, at least in the media and the locker room. I know his teammates love him. They're gonna miss his energy. They're gonna have to find a way to replace that. But I think that it, as far as he goes, it puts now a premium on the Bucs who suddenly don't have any linebackers. You know, because you think about last year, and you know Kendall Beckwith, who looked like a player 2 years ago as a rookie, ends up, you know, in that automobile accident before the season and goes on the non-football injury list, and now there's doubt whether he'll ever play again. And then you have, you know, Jack Ceci, who they drafted, had another knee injury. He had one in Wisconsin, so he gets hurt again. Cameron Lynch is a free agent. Adarius Taylor they don't want back. They re-signed Devontae Bond, but really you're just looking at Lavonte David. And so they've got to go out now and find a way to get a number of linebackers and or go to the draft, and that's where a lot of teams now will be thinking that the Bucs may really have a huge need for a guy like Devin White, who might be a reach at number 5. I don't know. Maybe he's not. Maybe in their eyes he's not. There's going to be a lot of good defensive linemen coming through there at that spot, especially if some of these quarterbacks get pushed up. But Devin White now at 240 pounds in a 3-4 defense, you know, under Todd Bowles, would suddenly become a very coveted draft pick and somebody that a lot of teams now will probably link to the Bucs, and maybe rightfully so. We'll see if they trade down and still can get them and pick up extra picks, all that stuff. But we'll see how it plays out. So that's how the day started, was with Kwon Alexander agreeing to a contract with the 49ers, okay? So next up, about noon, and I'm running around. Like, I try to sneak out, and it's like, okay, well, at least – get your wife a present. You know, like, it's her birthday. I'm sure she has something that she wants at Nordstrom's. You know, run out quick,
you,
half
you couldn't
hour,
plan you know. Ahead? You couldn't do this like a week or two
ago?
Well,
no, ago? I mean, I could have, but, you know, my life is just, yeah, I mean, it snuck up on me. What can I say? The kids were, we did stuff on Sunday. Her dad was in town. It was, I don't know, it was crazy. First of all, the birthday celebration actually happened on Friday. We went and had her dinner, and then I took her to dinner at Steelbach, and then nobody cares about this, but then we went to Hamilton, which was, you know, the big Broadway play that they had at the Straws and everything. So that was kind of our celebration. So anyway, but the kids have to have something. Anyway, I'm running around, and as soon as you do that, you know, boom, there's news. So DeSean Jackson decides he's going to break his own news. He decides, and I thought he was pulling an Antonio Brown. I mean, it felt that way for all the world, right? He puts on Instagram and then tweets it. He says, Tampa, it was a great experience, but things didn't work out, exclamation point. Looking forward to my next destination, dot, dot, dot. Stay tuned, hashtag one of one. And you're like, really? So that's it. So he's been cut, right? I mean, that's, I assume that must be what we're talking about, because clearly nobody was going to trade for him, right? So you check with the Buck. Nope, we didn't cut him. Well, did you tell him he's going to get? Nope, didn't tell him he's going to get released either. So you're like, well, what the? So, you know, before long, it was about 4 or 5 hours later, news breaks that he has indeed gotten his wish and been traded to the Philadelphia Eagles, where, of course, is where he started his career. Was a second-round draft pick there back in 08 and had some of his best years. And so it was all pending, however, on Deshaun reaching an agreement, and still is pending, I guess, for that matter, because nothing can, the deal can't be consummated until 4 o'clock on Wednesday. But it's pending on him reaching a deal with the Eagles, because he's on the hook for $10 million non-guaranteed for 19. I assume they're going to probably add a year to that. I don't know how much they're going to guarantee or if he's requiring that. I don't think he's getting Antonio Brown money, but he's going to come out ahead in this deal and probably get a more cap-friendly deal for the Eagles. But that's got to be worked out. As far as the Bucs compensation goes, they are going to get the Eagles' 2019 sixth-round pick. Okay, there's only 7 rounds. They're going to get a sixth-round pick this year. And in exchange for Jackson and that sixth round, they're going to get a sixth round pick. And then the Bucks in 2020, and this sounds silly, right? They have to send the Eagles their seventh rounder in 2020. So they get a sixth rounder this year. They send a seventh rounder next year. And the Eagles get Deshaun Jackson. Now, I'm just wondering, Steve, last October when Deshaun wanted out of here and it was approaching the trade deadline, what do you suppose they could have gotten for Deshaun Jackson?
Guessing more than a swap of 6th and 7th round picks.
That's what I think.
Maybe a fourth.
Maybe a fourth. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Maybe a fourth, which sounds, I mean, it's a lot different than what you can get in the 6th round is not what you, look, you got Quan Alexander in the 4th round, right? Enough said. There's a guy that, you know, turned out to be a terrific 4th round pick, and now he's off to making $54 million. So, you know, significantly more, okay? But at the time, because the trade deadline comes about week 5, you know, the Bucks at that point did not want to trade. You know, at that time, he was one of their more productive players. I mean, I think he had over 470-something yards his first 4 games. And so Deshaun was kind of rolling, but Jameis Winston had come back in the lineup, had taken over. He clearly didn't want to play with Jameis, and he had asked for a trade. And I think the Bucks felt like, if we trade him now, what's the signal to the rest of our team and to our fans? You know, are we giving up on the season by, you know, by letting go of one of our most productive players in 4 games, you know, for a draft pick for next year? When, if you're Jason Light, or at the time Dirk Cutter,
you were fighting for your job. You didn't even know if you'd have that draft pick.
Yeah, well, who said there was going to be a next year for you, right? So you're trying to win week to week. Like, you're not focused on anything but the Cincinnati game. And as, you know, Bill Belichick famously said, it's on Cincinnati. And so we were in Cincinnati, and I approached him, and the reports were out there, and he, you know, gave me the Heisman. And then he didn't talk about it, and then, you know, Jason didn't talk about it, but it happened. And so, you know, he actually had a good game with Jameis that game. They wound up losing because Jameis was god-awful. Ends up throwing, I think, 4 interceptions, and they lose. Fitzpatrick brings him back late, and then I think Jameis ended up getting benched after that. But the point is, had they traded him, they could have got, suffice to say, a lot more than an exchange of 6th and 7th round picks. Nonetheless, and I've always said this, and we just talked to Bruce Arians at the NFL Combine just a couple weeks ago, and Arians talked about, oh, yeah, I had a great meeting with Deshaun. Things were my end. Things were really positive. You know, we talked about his role, and he'd have to come in the offseason and learn the offense. And, you know, he seemed excited about, you know, being with us. And I think it really, you have to ask him, but I think it went really well. Look, it was all just a bunch of, you know what, because they, like with all their players in a contract, they wanted teams to believe, and maybe they were fair, but they wanted teams to believe that they wanted all their guys, that you know, if you wanted one of their players, you're going to have to offer them something for them. But now we know that Deshaun Jackson had no desire to play here. He demonstrated that last year, if not the year before, but, you know, certainly when he kind of shut it down at the end of the season with the thumb injury And then, you know, all the things that happened the previous year with him and Todd Monken and whatnot. So, you know, he never wanted to be here. And they clearly just kept him on the roster thinking that, you know, having been through the experience in October, that some team would want him and would trade for him. And some team did trade for him. They did get not what they could have gotten in October, but they got a sixth-round pick in exchange for a seventh-rounder. So he goes on to Philadelphia, assuming that he can reach an agreement on a new deal, which I can't imagine that he wouldn't. So good for Sha'Shawn Jackson, I guess. Good for the Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, it's a place that he had been released from because, remember, back in the day with Chip Kelly and all the stories about gang affiliations and that sort of thing. So he goes back there. Okay, so that leaves Adam Humphries. And Adam Humphries, we knew going in, of the three free agents that we knew that they wanted to retain, in my mind, Donovan Smith was always going to be the priority because, again, if this is a referendum year on Jameis Winston, you have to have your left tackle. So they got his deal done. It wiped out the salary cap. So now you're going to have to get some money. Well, they're going to get money from Deshaun, so that saves them $10 million under the salary cap. Okay, so now you got $12 million to play with without cutting anybody else. And so they certainly had enough to get Adam Humphries. But the problem is, I think, is just how much they have sort of budgeted already at the wide receiver position. I mean, Mike Evans is a $20 million a year salary. So that's a lot in and of itself. Chris Godwin's still an emerging player under rookie contract. You had Deshaun, you know, at $10 million at the time. And you know, he was in the process of being traded but wasn't traded yet. And then you have guys like Cameron Brate making $7 million and O.J. Howard on a rookie deal. So, you know, for all the receivers they had, where did Adam Humphries fit in? Well, a year ago, before the season, he asked for $8 million a year. And the Bucs were thinking, really? That's way too rich. We're not going to do that. So he rolled the dice. You know, he's one of these guys that made it to free agency and happened to have a career year prior to becoming a free agent. He has career-high 76 catches, a career-high 5 touchdowns. He does just a tremendous job. Started the year as their number 4 receiver because he was behind not just Evans and Deshaun, but also Chris Godwin. So he was their number 4 guy. But he winds up having just a fantastic year, and he hit free agency at the right time. And there turned out to be a bit of a bidding war for him. I mean, and that's what you need. You need not just one team, but if you have two teams or more that are really interested in you, then all of a sudden the price really goes up. And that was the case with Adam Humphries. And so the last I heard, it came down at the end because I think the Jets were in it for a while, but they went another direction. But it came down between the Tennessee Titans and the New England Patriots. And the Titans, quite frankly, I got to believe paid the most money, or I would think that, you know, Adam Humphries would love to be a New England Patriot right now, because what would be better than, you know, catching passes from Tom Brady? So Humphries winds up getting 4 years, $36 million from the Titans. And so I guess if nothing else, you can say, finally, we can decide the debate, Jameis Winston or Marcus Mariota, because Humphries will decide it. He's going to get an opportunity to play with both of them. And, you know, so that's another weapon for a guy like Mariota. And not coincidentally, John Robinson, who is the GM of the Tennessee Titans, was the Bucs player personnel director when Adam Humphries was discovered by Tampa Bay in a rookie tryout camp. So this is not a guy that was drafted in 2015, although he came in with that class with Jameis Winston and Donovan Smith and Ali Marpet and those guys. But he actually was, for better term, a walk-on from Clemson and has made himself into a stud. And, you know, on Wednesday when he signs his contract, he's gonna be $36 million richer, or at least has an opportunity to make that in the 4 years that he signed with the Titans. So they lose their slot receiver. And look, any way you look at this, no matter what you think of Deshaun and whether that's, you know, a good idea, a bad idea, or whether it will help Jameis Winston, which is sort of my personal opinion. However you look at it, they lost some production. I mean, you know, if you just look at what those two guys did last season, I think it was something like 117 catches for over 1,500 and something yards and 9 touchdowns. Just walked out of here, you know, on Monday. So they've got to make that up somehow. And how do they make it up? Well, Chris Godwin is going to have a bigger role. You know, he struggled at times last year. I remember he had a bad game against the Ravens and some other teams, but he's going to have to improve. He's going to have to get better. He's going to be their number two wide receiver. They got a guy in Justin Watson that they drafted last year that didn't get to play much, but he's another big guy, big receiver. And let's face it, I mean, if you want, you might be able to draft Hunter Renfro from Clemson, who they've never seen Humphreys and Renfro together because they think they're the same guy. I mean, you wouldn't know the difference, including the number that they wear, if you just sort of watch them. So they can always go into the draft and maybe find a slot receiver as well, or there's plenty of free agents that are still available too. So I'm sure it hurt them to lose a guy like Humphreys, and it'll definitely hurt Jameis Winston, who had a great rapport with him. And, you know, since they came in together, they've thrown a lot of footballs, and he trusts them. And that's the biggest thing about having a receiver like that you trust. But that was the day, sort of in a nutshell, and it was flying at us, you know, constantly, that involved the Bucs players. And so Jason Light is sort of on the other side now. Remember, every year that he's been here, it seems like the Bucs have won free agency. They've signed the most free agents, or they made the big splash signings. Well, how many of those ever really worked out, right? And I guess, you know, the positive of all this, the reason why, in part, that they don't have the money to retain these guys is that if you look at that 2015 class, which is probably the best undoubtedly the best that Jason Light has had, whether you're talking about Winston or Donovan Smith or Ali Marpet or even Quan Alexander now going to San Francisco, or Humphreys if you want to include him, all those guys now are going to make over $10 million per season. I mean, Winston's going to make $20 million. So that's a pretty good haul, you know, and unlike other years when draft picks or players would leave to go some other team, the Bucks will actually get back a compensatory pick probably for Quan Alexander. I mean, they could get back as much as like a third rounder. So that'll be next year. But there is some value to that. The Patriots end up doing that all the time, where they get all these compensatory picks, and that's sort of how they rebuild their team or reload it. So but that's sort of the way the day went for them. And to be honest with you, I don't know that they made any mistakes here. I mean, you know, it's always tough to lose players, but, you know, again, each one of those guys sort of has, you know, you got to look at them individually. If you look at them collectively, you might go, wow, you just lost a lot, just walked out of the building. But when you really look at, you know, you're trying to help Jameis Winston, well, is Deshaun really going to help him, or is he going to be a hindrance? And I think that the last 2 years, I think it's been something in Jameis's head about forcing the ball to him, and he can't throw the deep ball and this sort of thing. So they'll have to replace the production, and he was over, you know, 18 yards a catch, which is ridiculous. But I think it's going to help Jameis. And I think that, you know, same thing is true with with Quan. You know, they had the reasons for not signing him. Now, where they go from here, I still think, Steve, that we're not done here. I really believe that there could be, you know, more subtractions. I wonder about Gerald McCoy. Nothing happened to him, you know, yet, certainly on Monday. And it may not happen for a while. Who knows?
Maybe if they're not signing anybody at this point, there's no need to cut him yet.
There's no need to cut anyone. But they're going to have to sign some players because, I mean, and I just think that it's going to be a different type of free agent. Like when free agency sort of blast off like it did on Monday, there's a bunch of big names out there, and they all get gobbled up for ridiculous money. I mean, you know, when you think of, you know, some of the deals that are made that first day. I mean, you know, Landon Collins, I mean, you know, that guy absolutely broke the bank because he went to Washington. He went to a division rival. He's a three-time Pro Bowler. He was able to sort of dictate tremendous terms with them. And, you know, he absolutely, you know, is going to get paid. And there were a number of guys like that. But, you know, again, I think, the Bucks. If you're a Bucks fan, you've been on the other side of this. You've seen your team win the offseason every single year since, you know, really.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Since Lovie Smith walked in the building, at least, and what has it led to? One winning season. I mean, it does not translate. You know, they're 5-11, 5-11. This is their fifth head coach since 2010. So I think at this point, you got to kind of trust the process and say, well, you know, the good news is that they did draft some good players that made it to second contracts, and that's why they don't have as much money, because we have a good core. But you still got to find a way to fill some of those holes through the draft and through free agency. And I still think they may have to create more money. I don't know that $12 million is enough, but you're right. They don't have to do anything until they need the money for free agents or for somebody else. And I'm not sure how soon that will be.
Well, look, we also know that in this round of free agency, you tend to overspend.
Oh, yeah.
You pay way too much to because it's a bidding war, essentially, or a perceived one that the agents of players are creating. There's going to be another wave of free agency after this free agency if some players cut. If we remember last year, Vinny Curry was not a free agent on day one of free agents.
That's right.
He was cut days later, and the Bucks then signed him. You're going to have another wave of free agency after the draft.
No doubt.
Okay, we picked up a cornerback now. We don't need this cornerback anymore.
That's so true.
And then training camp when you're going to have players cut. You know, so the Bucks at this point, you know, a couple names have surfaced they may be talking to, but, you know, it kind of looks like they may be waiting for some of the secondary waves of free agency, which means they don't need the money now, so no need to cut McCoy now. You know, someone goes down, another team has a defensive tackle go down to minicamp, there may be a market to trade him.
And there's still a glut. I mean, there's a glut of those defensive tackles that you mentioned, whether you're talking about Ndamukong Suh. I mean, there's guys that have not been signed yet. Now, in the next 2 to 3 days, they might have some deals. But as long as there's just a bunch of options, you know, you're not going to get a team trying to trade for a guy like Gerald. And there may not be a trade market for him. But, you know, you'll have to sort of weigh that, like you said, when after the draft or whenever, you know, something becomes available that you want to take advantage of. But for right now, and maybe even for the season, you know, he seems to be okay. I'm not forecasting anything one way or the other, but I think just the same way I thought that DeSean Jackson, you know, was not going to be on this football team, I have wondered about Gerald. I've been told that he is back, that it's going to be the same contract, and I was told, no, don't count him in just yet. I mean, the Bucks have sort of had it both ways with a lot of their players under contract. They don't want to admit that they're gone, because just like Jackson, I mean, you didn't get much for him. You know, you swapped a sixth for a seventh, but you did get compensation. You got something back, and something is better than nothing, right? So, you know, if there's no reason to dump a guy like that and get the $10 million right away, then they worked the system as best they could, and they ended up getting some compensation, and he goes to Philadelphia where he's happy. So I think it all sort of worked out for both of them. All right, so free agency is going to continue the legal tampering period where teams can reach agreements, can't sign a player until, again, Wednesday at 4 p.m. when the new league year begins. But there could be more movement. Maybe the Bucks will be involved in acquiring some players now that they have about $12 or $13 million under the salary cap. One player that's been mentioned, Greg Allman, my former partner, mentioned this on Twitter, and now with The Athletic, said that the Bucks have reached out and are talking to former Cardinals linebacker Deion Buchanan. You know, he's a guy that played under Bruce Arians in Arizona from 2014 to 17. 26-year-old, a guy that can play inside linebacker, has played some safety, but he's also could be a guy that the Giants might be interested in because their former defensive coordinator from the Cardinals is there now. So, you know, that's just one name. There'll be others. I'm sure of this. The Bucks are going to be in a linebacker market. I think there might be some interest in safeties. By the way, with respect to safeties, the Honey Badger, of course, Tyrann Mathieu, who many people thought might be headed to Tampa with Bruce Arians, the guy that drafted him, he's actually got a pretty good deal. It's not in front of me right now, but he's going to the Kansas City Chiefs. So he goes from the Houston Texans to the Chiefs with a team that, you know, absolutely, you know, could have been in the Super Bowl last year, lost in the AFC Championship game to the New England Patriots. So, you know, that's where Tyrann Mathieu is. There's still other free agent safeties out there. It's a big safety market.
Landon Collins no longer out there, though.
Landon Collins is gone, and he went, again, for a huge salary to the Washington Redskins, which I think is a great pickup for them because their defense needed an infusion. And, you know, this guy has been to three Pro Bowls already and still, I think, like all of 25 years old or 26 years old. So somebody that's going to be in Washington for a while. His idol was Sean Taylor. Remember the late, great Miami, University of Miami safety that was shot and killed tragically when he played for the Redskins. Might have been a Hall of Fame player, the arc that his career was on. But so he goes to a place that that his idol growing up played in Sean Taylor. So that's a good acquisition by the Washington Redskins. And, again, anytime you can take a division player from a rival like that, from the Giants, it helps you in two ways. So there'll be a lot more silly contracts. We'll be following that. Please follow us on TampaBay.com. I was blogging all day. It was insane. Schefter was talking faster than I could type. I was, you know, trying to stay in contact with the Bucks about some things. And so we're going back and forth. And like I said, you know, somewhere in there, we managed to get some cupcakes and a gift for my wife's birthday. So happy birthday, honey. Meanwhile, your Tampa Bay Lightning were back in action, and they were in Toronto, which is always a great place to play. I'm sure that players get stoked about that. I mean, that is, Steve, that is still the sort of the, no matter how bad or good they've been over the years, that is still the mecca, right, of Canadian hockey?
It is, and that's where the most media is for the hockey world. The Hall of Fame is there. It is pretty much the epicenter. The you know, reviews when they on the ice, that was all up there. So that is the mecca. Mm-hmm. You know, Toronto's got a good team. They're all excited about John Tavares. Apparently, there was a lot of kids at morning skate this morning. They were all booing the Lightning when they took the ice.
Really?
Yeah. It was like kids were off today, and I don't know if it's spring break up there or whatever else. They had a bunch of kids groups at the morning skate, and so when the Lightning took the ice, they were booing them.
Wow. You're the best.
You're
the best team. Yeah, well, yeah, it worked well. Got Lightning all fired up. They came out on fire because of that booing. You're the best team in hockey, and the people that are supposed to appreciate hockey the most are booing you.
Well, I think a lot of it comes to your division rival, but it's also because Stamkos turned them down.
Well, that's true. And I bet he's happy he did.
I'm wondering if John Tavares is wishing he had come to Tampa this year.
Yeah, or that too. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, granted, Toronto's a good team, and they're doing well, but...
Yeah. Well, they weren't as far along. I mean, to their credit, I mean, they've done very well. But the Lightning were further along as an organization and a team that had been in the Stanley Cup. So,
well, that's the thing. Toronto's a couple years behind in the developmental process. Yeah. From when Lou Lamoriello took over and Brendan Shanahan and Mike Babcock got there, they're a couple years behind. But they've got some real salary cap issues next year. They're going to lose some players starting next year, where the Lightning had enough young players in development that – you know, they've been able to go all this time without losing players to salary cap casualties. Now, they're going to have to start that going forward. But the Lightning salary cap's in a much better spot than Toronto starting next year. Toronto's a mess next year salary cap-wise. So,
look, this is the Lightning's year. They absolutely just slapped Toronto around. They were up 6-1 at one point, give up a goal with about 4 seconds left, unfortunately for Vasilevskiy, who could have done without it. But nonetheless, they win 6-2, and as I mentioned in the open, Tyler Johnson with a couple of goals, Andre Palat with a couple as well. But I mentioned, you know, Diana had written this in her story. It is good to be lucky, but it's also better if you're lucky and good, and that's sort of what the Lightning were. They put a lot of shots on the net. Look, they had pucks coming off skates and bouncing to them for rebounds and deflecting off guys' gloves and stuff like that. But that's all part of the process, man. I mean, nobody remembers how you scored it, right? You just throw enough up on there. And if you got guys in position, I know they had one shorthanded goal where I thought Toronto just loafed.
Well, they went for a line change. The puck went down the ice, Gord goes after it, and the whole Toronto team goes for a line change.
Right. And there's nobody back.
So
and
it's a 3-on-1.
It was ridiculous. It was like, wait a minute, they're shorthanded, and then what the hell is this? And so they tic-tac-toed them on that one. So they jumped out to a, like I said, a 5-1 lead, I think, and they hung on. It was 6-1 and then 6-2 for their 53rd win, and they're just one shy of the franchise record, I believe.
They said last year 54 wins. Yep,
last year's right, and they still have 12 games to go. So yep. I mean, they could shatter that by leaps and bounds. I mean, the way they're playing, they're winning, you know, hell, 9 out of 10 games these days.
Well, they're the seventh team in NHL history to get 110 points in their first 70 games.
It's crazy. Seven. I mean, think about
that. And the last time that was done was the 95-96 Red Wings, who did it in 69 games.
Good Lord. Was that 30 years ago? Or something like that, thereabouts? 23 years ago, yeah. Well, feels like 30 to me. But yeah, I mean, that's rare air stuff. I mean, where they're at right now. There was a point, Steve, and I don't know how you feel about this. I guess people don't think this way, but I thought this way. I said to my wife, I go, it's 6-1. Don't you think they should take Vasilevskiy out? What if he got hurt? I'm just like constantly like, at this point, I'm starting to think.
Yeah, but there's also that superstition of you start taking a goalie who's playing well out, and then, you know, Domingue comes in to give up a goal or two, and then what'd you do?
What?
I mean, hockey is very superstitious in that regard, too.
And then the next thing you know, you're in a dogfight, and it's 6-5. Yeah.
So the Lightning, Lightning clinched a playoff spot last Friday, as we talked about. They now have 110 points. Boston's the next best team in the NHL at 93. The Lightning need just 10 points in their next 12 games, and they clinch home ice for the playoffs. They clinch the President's Trophy at that point.
10 points in 12 games. So that's like 5 wins, right? Or a combination of 5 wins and a couple ties.
Right. And if Boston loses any points in that one, that counts towards that too. So it's in their magic
number. So the magic number. Okay, it's a magic number. So it could happen in 5 games or
But they could go 5 and 7 and they'll clinch the President's Trophy if Boston wins out.
Okay. So really, I know, okay, I understand what you mean by superstition. You pull a guy out of the game, maybe next thing you know they score a couple goals, whatever. But let me say this. You've clinched home ice is still out there. So if in the next 3 to 5 games you wrap up home ice, right, throughout the playoffs, do you start resting people? At what point do you go, you know what, you're not going to play 20 minutes tonight? Or
I definitely think they're
going to
be doing that. Yes, I think you'll see Domingue play a lot down the stretch. You want to keep Vasilevskiy in a rhythm enough. You want to keep him in a rhythm enough.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I think you saw that with Domingue playing Saturday in Detroit. You know, that I think you're going to see him scatter in a few more games than the schedule had been.
Yeah.
You know, but you want to play Vasilevskiy enough so he stays in a rhythm. You don't want him going in the playoffs cold.
Right. But you can start to give some guys days off, right?
Sure.
I mean, you can say, hey, Victor Hedman, you're not playing tonight. Or,
now, my guess is they're not going to give Kucherov a night off because he's going for the Hart Trophy.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But you could scale down a few of his shifts.
Even though, what's the Hart Trophy worth, really? I mean, in the grand scheme of things, like, if he takes a hit trying to get...
And he wants the scoring title. I mean, he was leading the scoring title last year late and then, you know, got passed.
Now he's got a big lead
this year, but...
It's the old adage that once you start thinking about injury, then guys get hurt. I mean, it's sort of that way. I mean, and football has gone through this, you know, and that's why... You know, the NFL shifted things to where there used to be a lot of these games at the end of the season that didn't mean anything. And so, you know, it'd be like a preseason game. They'd rest everybody, and then they'd have to play a playoff game the next week. And that can bite you on the butt, too, because you lose your momentum. And you know, I've seen both coaches do it two ways. But what the NFL started doing was they started putting division games at the end of the season so that most likely they would have some impact on the standings. And so you couldn't rest people, you know, and that sort of – tampered down that sort of habit. But, you know, I mean, it's the same with hockey. I mean, you have guys you want to, you know, here's the golden rule is that if anybody has anything that's bothering them from an injury standpoint, you know, everybody's hurt at this time of year, then you don't want to put anybody on the ice where you can just give them an extra day here or there, you know. Yep. So
I think they've done that with a lot of these injuries this year, too. A lot of these day-to-day injuries. Maybe they've sat a player out an extra game or two because they have the depth, they have the lead. There's no reason. I mean, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see Stamkos sit out a game or two down the stretch.
That's what I was thinking.
You know, just you're not sitting him out a ton, but you got a couple back-to-backs still to come. Maybe he misses one of the back-to-backs. And it's just about resting for the playoffs. It's about making sure you're going in as fresh as can be mentally and physically. Sometimes that break mentally can be nice, too. Now, right. What is weird is in 2 weeks, they're going to get a four-day rest between home games, between Boston and Washington. They've got 4 days in a row off when the next to last week of the season, which is rare. So maybe they don't rest as much because they're getting a break there.
Yeah, that makes sense. You just got to be smart about it. I'm sure they have a plan, and mm-hmm. But I was just thinking, actually said it out loud, that, you know, wow, it's 6-1. You think, what if somebody came sliding into Vassy right now? Like, how mm-hmm. would you feel? But I also understand what you're saying in terms of you really can't play scared. I mean, you can't go into it like that. But you can certainly give guys extra days here and there, and I would look for John Cooper to do that. But, man, what an amazing season, and they just keep and that's what the, you know, this is what the Lightning can do to you. Like, if you're not on your game, and even a team like Toronto that's had a pretty good year, boy, they will embarrass you. You know what I mean? Like, and that's always sort of the reason, in a way, in addition to teams fighting for points this time of year, teams also know that, like, when you go up against somebody that's that good and that dominant, that they don't want to be humiliated on their home ice. You know, like, you're sometimes going to get their best punch because they're like, look, if we come out here flat, we might look up at a 5-1 score in the first period. You know what I mean? Like, you never want to get embarrassed. And the Lightning can absolutely embarrass you if they get a few bounces. And that's sort of what happened on Monday night. Meanwhile, your Tampa Bay Rays were in Clearwater. They were playing the Philadelphia Phillies. Now, opening day is, less than 2.5 weeks away, right?
2 weeks from Thursday. How about this for the opening day matchups? Blake Snell versus Justin Verlander. Oof. That's the Cy Young Award winner versus the Cy Young runner-up. And in the National League, it's DeGrom versus Scherzer. Cy Young Award winner versus the Cy Young runner-up.
Almost like they knew what they were doing there.
Do you think baseball scheduled baseball that way on purpose?
I think they thought about it a little bit, yeah.
But those are two good opening day matchups. Where's
that game? Did the race start in Houston, or is Houston
here? No, it's here. It's at the Trop.
Think... Kate Upton might be around yelling some things at Rays fans for
very possible
for her husband.
Although hasn't she sworn off this market and wouldn't come here?
I think
anymore?
She did. Yeah, I think she might have. Unfortunately, but that was the whole thing. Like him and was Verlander the runner up to the Cy Young
last year? Yes, right? Yes, he was.
Yeah. Well, this will decide it then on opening day. But it is about 2.5 weeks away, and until Monday, Blake Snell had just thrown. Like 4 innings, I believe, mm-hmm. right? But he went out and he was dealing against the Phillies. 2 perfect innings. They beat the Phillies 8-2, and he ended up just mowing through some hitters, including he froze Bryce Harper on a 96-mile-per-hour fastball.
That contract isn't worth it. Overpaid.
Right. The extra $5,000 they gave him? Yeah, $5,000. Wow. Sounds like my last race. But
talking Harper's contract. He's overrated.
Oh well, he is for sure. Yeah. Oh, nobody's worth that money. I mean, let's be honest.
Hey, how can if someone pays you that, you're worth that.
Oh, I'm signing it, sure. But he got McCutcheon to ground out. He got ground outs, a fly out, another ground out. I mean, he was throwing strikes, and that was a great thing to see him, sort of be in that groove, and he felt good. I mean, remember he played, what was it, the last time he went out against USF, I think, and he was upset sort of about his approach. But let's not worry about Blake Snell because it looks like he got it done. I'm starting to feel good about the Rays. You know, they started out the spring training. You know, it was like, hey, you lost 3 in a row, guys. Let's get going. And, of course, the starters were getting all of about 1 at bat or so. But you know what, they've kind of picked it up here, and they still got 2.5 weeks to go. So as long as knock on wood, the team stays healthy. Although your boy, you know, the guy, remember we interviewed him at the Rays Fan Fest, Matt Duffy, did all this work in the off season, was feeling great. He's still not back on the field. He's got a little bit of a lingering hamstring issue,
reminiscent of 2 years ago.
It really is, and it's scary because. You know, sort of like Kevin Kiermaier, you are what your baseball card starts to say you are. Well, he's got an injury thing, man. Mm-hmm. You know, he's having a tough time staying on the field. We know how hard he talked about how hard he worked and put on all this weight and got his legs back and maybe did too much, but he's struggling right now with the hamstring thing. Pretty good column. I think you can read this on TampaBay.com. If I'm not mistaken, John Romano wrote a column about Kevin Kiermaier. And Mr. Hustle, hustled himself into a double against the Phillies the other day, and there was a tweet out there about how, yep, that's how I do it, man, running hard all the time. He also dove headfirst into a bag in spring training. So there's that. But I thought John Romano kind of, and you kind of disagree with this a little bit, but I thought he kind of captured Kiermaier, the essence of Kiermaier a little bit when he said essentially that Kevin Kiermaier is a better baseball player than you think he is, but he's not as good as he's never going to be as good as he wants to be. So somewhere in there there's truth, right? I mean, a little bit.
I would say it's almost he's better than you realize he is defensively, and you think he's good defensively. I think he's superb defensively.
He's exceptional. Yeah, I think he's exceptional.
I think he never lives up to his potential offensively.
That's
he's
the
too
deal.
Busy trying to yoke it.
Absolutely.
He's not a power yep. guy. Use nope. your speed. Use the abilities you have. Hit it to mm-hmm. the gaps and run.
Yeah.
Malik absolutely. Smith did that very well last year.
Yeah. Absolutely. His approach was perfect.
When he
didn't
stopped
try
trying
to
swing for fences, when he would just hit it to where they mm-hmm. ain't, hit it to the gaps and run.
Yeah.
And Malik's had a fantastic year offensively.
I don't know if it was his hand injury or just, you know, I don't know what caused it exactly, but like I noticed Kiermaier's swing, he was really coming off the ball. You know what I mean? Like he was, his front side was just flying open, and you could tell it was almost like he wasn't even trying to hit it far. Hell, he was trying to hit it around the foul pole. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like he was really opening up early and just, you know, pulling off everything. And he says he's worked at it, you know, as far as, hey, less is better, less is more, the old Joe Maddon thing, where, you know, if he just uses his hands and barrels up the ball and kind of goes the other way where it's mm-hmm. pitched. I watched a kid, I swear to God, I know it's not a perfect parallel, but it's baseball. So when I was at Arkansas State, we had a guy, Tim Maloney, who was from Chicago, and he came in the same year I did. We were like roommates. And I've never seen a better I've never seen a guy make better contact. He's a little guy. He's all of about 5'9", 5'10". He could hit a ball 400 feet if he wanted to, but he did the best job because he could run. And he was a switch hitter, but he hit a lot from the, you know, left-handed. And he just had this ability to hit the ball on the ground between third and short, you know, hit it the other way. And a routine ground ball in the hole, because he could run and he got out of the box so fast, I'll bet he got, you know, in a college baseball season, I bet he got 25 hits just legging out ground balls,
mm-hmm.
you know. And then the third baseman would come up because he could bunt a little bit. I mean, that has to be your game. And he was a leadoff guy. And if Kiermaier, you've seen him do it on occasion, and if he would just commit to it, you know, and I think that's what he's trying to do offensively is just commit to, you know, going the other way and not trying to overswing. And, you know, look, he's still got the power to turn on a ball. I mean, it becomes natural when
there
you see
there are times to try to turn on the ball.
Oh, sure. And there's also times where if the location of the pitch mm-hmm. is going to open you up. Like, you know, if you throw a ball down and into a left-hander where he just drops the bat on it, the barrel on it, you know, just mm-hmm. kind of like throws his hips and drops – those balls are going to be jacked anyway. You know, mm-hmm. that's the natural. He's throwing it into your power zone to where, you know, you're going to swing hard at that no matter what because you're trying to yank it. And but you just have to be committed to going where the ball is pitched. And that's what Kiermaier has not been. But if he ever really, and he says he's trying to, if he ever really commits to that, then he would be a perennial all-star. The other part of it, though, of course, which you can't coach out of him apparently, and there's no really – desire on the Rays' part to do it, is he's got to learn to play more games. You know, he has to realize that, you know, a fly ball in the second inning in June that he could break his wrist on trying to dive for, that's only a single with nobody out, maybe not be the one that he wants to, you know, die mm-hmm. on the hill for.
Mm-hmm.
That he just has to understand that my value to my team is being out here every day. Just standing out here in center field. And so, you know, that's the next level stuff, right? And I don't know how you process that in an instant because it goes against all his instincts. But the corner outfielders that he has that he can play with Austin Meadows and Tommy Pham and those guys might help him out in that he doesn't feel like he has to, mm-hmm. you know, dive in the hole for every ball and there'll be guys over there in position to make plays. So we'll see if he can stay healthy. I mean, that's the only thing he's missing is just, you know, is just being on the field, because if he's on the field, like you said, above average defensive player, well above average, platinum glove winner,
yes,
but not an average offensive player,
you know, could
has
be.
Has a lot more potential he could reach towards.
Bigger upside, you know, yeah.
To me, what I think he needs to work on is the situational hitting. For instance, Malik Smith last year, one of the things he did really well in his game and improved and why he was so good offensively was he had a different approach at the plate depending on if it was the first inning or the seventh inning. If it was down a run or up a run, if there's runners on, if depending on the pit, you know, look, if you're is it the eighth inning and you're the leadoff batter and you're down two runs, a home run doesn't mean anything. You need to get on base. That's not the time to try to swing for the fences. You know, and it's understanding that there are times to do that, but there are times where I just need to get a hit. Let me hit it to the gap and run. Let me just get on base. And that's what I think I'd like to see Kevin Kiermaier do more of is understand, you know, the situation of the game and understanding what's going to help my team the best. Not, okay, I think I can take this pitcher out of the yard. I'm swinging for the fences. There are times to do that, but most of the time it's not for him because that's not his game. And that's not where he thrives offensively.
Yeah,
and that's what I want to see him do better. That's why I think he's got untapped potential on the offensive side of the ball.
He's got a big upside on that. Develop.
Yeah,
yeah, he's got a big upside on offense. On defense, he's at or near the ceiling, and yet his floor on defense is absurd, right? Even if he plays an average center field for him, it's above average for everybody else. So, yeah, and yet his floor as an offensive player is pretty low. You know, he can go through stretches where. He's just not helping. And I know they want him to be a leadoff guy. I don't think he's a leadoff guy until he makes more contact, but that's for Kevin Cash
now,
to figure out.
The good thing for the Rays this year, too, is that if Kiermaier does go down, Tommy Pham can play center field, and he's an above-average outfielder.
Yes.
Guillermo Heredia can play center field. He's an above-average defensive outfielder. So they have more depth defensively now in the outfield than they've had in some years. Malik could cover a lot of ground, but he was an adventure in the outfield.
He was a liability.
He could make some spectacular plays, and then he could make some errors on plays that he shouldn't be making errors on. It was the Malik's effect.
He could box a fly ball. The Malik's effect was always in play. And he was Skates Nehemiah. I mean, we used to call, was it Lonnie Smith for the Cardinals years ago? Skates out in left field. That's sort of what he reminded me of. Mm-hmm. That's for you old-timers out there to look that up. But yeah, he was an adventure. It was the Malik's effect. No doubt about it. So, anyway, interesting week. Like I said, we will continue our free agency frenzy, as they call it, on NFL Network, and we'll have it right here on Sports Day Tampa Bay all week, I'm sure. The Rays will continue spring training. The Lightning are back in action when, Steve?
Thursday night in Detroit, and then they're home Saturday to play the Washington Capitals for the first time this season. They have three games against the Capitals to end the season, but...
So this Saturday, the Washington Caps are in town?
That's the first time that the Lightning will play the Caps. They'll go to Washington like a week later, and then Washington's back here 2 weeks.
Dude, I might have to give me some tickets to that one now. I'm sure it's sold out, but come on.
That's 195 sellouts in a row at Amalie Arena.
Dude, that's fire, though. That's fire. With them coming back for the first time since winning the Cup? Mm-hmm. Oh, that's fire.
And
that's
I think Washington and Boston are the two teams that can challenge the Lightning in the East in the playoffs.
Yeah. You don't think Pittsburgh can?
Look, anytime Sid Crosby's on the ice, yes, they have a shot, but their back end's a mess in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, that's true.
They've got a lot of issues on the back end.
They've
especially
really struggled,
especially if Letang is hurt. You know, anytime Crosby's, and you got Malkin and Kessel, you know, they can do some damage.
They got dudes. They definitely have dudes. So, yeah, wow, that's something to look forward to. It's going to be a good week, going to be a good weekend. So we're glad you're here with us. We're here every Monday through Friday on Sports Day Tampa Bay. And remember, really helps us out if you guys will support our sponsors. I know that you have a choice of air conditioning companies, but listen, Millionaire is the place you want to call. Howard and Sue Million have been doing this for a long time in Tampa Bay area. And if you give those folks an opportunity, they're going to give you a great deal. They're offering 0% interest for 72 months on qualifying equipment. Give them a call at 727-862-2100 and take advantage of their offer today. Trust the masters of comfort, Millionaire. All right, free agency continues. We'll talk to you tomorrow about that and other things. For Steve Versnick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everybody.
Mom deserves deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.